This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Stephen Hatfill is launching a campaign to clear his name. He is the bioweapons scientist who has been under intensive FBI investigation in connection with the anthrax letter attacks that killed 5 people 2 years ago. Hatfill says he is innocent and claims the scrutiny is ruining his life. NPR has learned that his attorneys are preparing lawsuits that will charge some journalists and others with defamation. His spokesman also is providing new details about Hatfill's whereabouts when the letters were mailed. NPR's David Kestenbaum reports.
Stephen Hatfill is not speaking publicly these days. His spokesman is a stocky guy named Pat Clausen, who has worked as an investigative reporter and is also a friend of Hatfill's. I met Clausen at a restaurant up the street from the apartment where Hatfill is living. Go by the apartment, Clausen says, and you're likely to find someone sitting in a car outside, watching. When the two of them go out for lunch, he says, surveillance crews follow. Once Hatfill missed a turn in a traffic circle.
And he drove around and around and around, with the entire FBI entourage following him around that traffic circle in bumper-to-bumper gridlock traffic on a Friday rush hour afternoon. It was like watching a merry-go-round, a circus in motion. It was just incredible.
Hatfill lost his job last summer after the Department of Justice contacted his employer, Louisiana State University, to say it did not want him working on a government grant. No one will hire Stephen Hatfill now, Clausen says. He says Hatfill spends much of his days on his girlfriend's couch watching TV. Sometimes he sees a story about himself on cable and gets angry. The other week, a friend from second grade called to say he'd been interviewed by the FBI. Clausen, by this point, is well practiced at shooting down the popular arguments for why Stephen Hatfill looks suspicious. Yes, he says, while working for a defense contractor, Stephen Hatfill once supervised the preparation of a report on the threat of anthrax spores sent through the mail. But he says Hatfill has never worked with anthrax. And yes, a magazine once ran a picture of Hatfill in a kitchen wearing a gas mask demonstrating how a terrorist might cook up plague bacteria with things purchased at a supermarket. But Clausen says the picture was not Hatfill's idea. He says it came from the National Institutes of Health, where Hatfill worked at one time.
And that photo was taken as part of a PR campaign to help educate the public about what the risks of bioterrorism were about. That was not a photograph that Steve took of himself in some home lab. That was a government PR picture.
A spokesperson for the NIH, however, says no one there has ever heard of such a PR campaign, and the picture looks like a snapshot, not a professional photograph. An editor at the magazine where the picture ran says Hatfill himself provided the photo. Clausen later amended his statement, saying the picture was developed at NIH, but Hatfill couldn't remember who had taken it. At the end of the interview with Pat Clausen, I notice a man standing quietly a few feet away smoking. It's not government surveillance, but another reporter, also meeting with Clausen today. Stephen Hatfill and his lawyers, Clausen says 4 are working on the case, have plenty to occupy them. Even now, a year since the FBI declared Hatfill a person of interest in the investigation, his name still regularly lands on the front page. This month, the New York Times ran a prominent story saying that a major reason Hatfill came under suspicion was that he had done work assembling a mock-up of a mobile bioweapons lab for military training. Colonel Bill Darley is a spokesman for the United States Special Operations Command in Tampa. He says the FBI did search the mobile lab, but the lab was incapable of manufacturing anything by design.
So anybody that even tried to do anything with this equipment other than just use it as a training tool, you know, would be ineffective. You wouldn't even be able to culture good beer in there, much less anthrax or something like that.
Like many things in Stephen Hatfill's life, his involvement in the mobile lab project can be seen 2 ways. Some observers say it makes him worth investigating, and others say it proves his patriotism. Some anthrax scientists tell NPR they worry Hatfill may be another Richard Jewell, the man wrongly fingered in the 1996 Olympic Park bombings in Atlanta. Suspicions about Stephen Hatfill among experts and in the media center on circumstantial evidence, his knowledge of bioweapons, his research on terrorism. But what about the key questions? Could Stephen Hatfill have actually committed the crime? The 4 recovered anthrax letters were postmarked in New Jersey, 2 on September 18th, 2 on October 9th. Where was Hatfill then? Last summer, he released handwritten timesheets that he said proved he was at work in the Washington, D.C. area on those dates. But that second date, a Tuesday, was the day after Columbus Day, when mail didn't get picked up, so the letters could have been placed in a mailbox over the previous weekend. Now, after repeated requests from NPR, Stephen Hatfill has released more details about that weekend. Hatfill's spokesman says on Saturday, October 6, 2001, Hatfill and his girlfriend were at a wedding in Baltimore. NPR has confirmed this with two witnesses. His spokesman said Hatfill then spent Sunday with his girlfriend in the Washington area, sleeping off a hangover. His spokesman also says that the FBI has reviewed security and computer records at the defense contractor where Hatfill worked. The computer records show when and where Hatfill was when he logged in. He says they placed Stephen Hatfill at work, confirming what was written on the timesheets released last summer. NPR repeatedly requested further documentation of Hatfill's whereabouts, credit card receipts, or phone records, but Hatfill's spokesman said they had all been handed over to the FBI and duplicates were unavailable. Could Hatfill have snuck away at night? He dismissed that possibility at a press conference last summer.
All right, then. I could have driven or surreptitiously somehow transported myself to Trenton or Princeton, mailed the letters, and returned unnoticed. And maybe I could have made the 8-hour round trip in enough time to return to work unnoticed and exhausted and continued with another 13-hour day. I have little to say about the nonsense of this sort.
Now, nearly a year later, and with suspicions still swirling around him, Hatfill is going on the offensive. His spokesman says Hatfill's attorneys are preparing lawsuits. Some will target journalists, though his spokesman won't say who. Last summer, Stephen Hatfill expressed anger at New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof. Kristof wrote columns urging the FBI to investigate a certain Mr. Z. He later disclosed Mr. Z was Stephen Hatfill. Hatfill also publicly criticized Barbara Hatch Rosenberg, a biological arms control expert at the State University of New York at Purchase. In his telling, the FBI's investigation of him intensified dramatically after Rosenberg spoke to Senate staffers and FBI agents last year. Rosenberg says she never mentioned any names.
I put together all of the evidence I knew about the perpetrator, but I didn't put it in full detail. Some items I left rather vague because I didn't, again, want to be pointing a finger at any particular person. It was interesting that the FBI then started to work harder on the investigation, and they seem to have kept going ever since, so I feel good about that.
Hatfill has also railed against the Justice Department, charging a campaign of deliberate leaks to the media. A few months ago, the department responded, in writing, to one of Hatfill's lawyers. The letter, which has not previously been disclosed, says that the department conducted an internal investigation, but each person interviewed denied, under penalty of perjury, that they had leaked information to the press. In the meantime, Hatfill inhabits a strange zone. He's not an official suspect, but he hasn't been cleared either. The FBI declined to comment on when Hatfill's limbo might end, but Deputy Attorney General Larry Thompson recently told NPR that he thought the anthrax case would not drag on indefinitely.
The FBI's agents are working very hard on that investigation, and I'm confident that investigation will be solved.
Back by the apartment where Stephen Hatfill is living, things appear quiet these days. On four occasions this month, NPR attempted to verify claims of FBI surveillance, but turned up only empty parked cars. Hatfill's spokesman, Pat Clausen, says the surveillance seems to have stopped for the moment. There have been lulls before, he says, but they don't last. David Kestenbaum, NPR News, Washington.